Hey there, Ear Hustle producer Rasan New York Thomas.
What's up, executive producer Bruce Wallace? I like giving Earlonne and Nigel a break from the mic sometimes so the rest of us can take over.
I know. I hope we don't burn the building down.
Hopefully not.
But we are here to say thank you to listeners who have already donated to our fundraiser.
Yes, thank you. And since we're making folks listen to us, let's make this fun. Bruce, what's something that you wish listeners knew about making Ear Hustle?
Yeah, you know, one thing I think about a lot is that we get a huge volume of notes, messages coming in email and social media, snail mail. And unlike other shows where I've worked, we actually read and respond to almost everything we get. Not like the real mean stuff, but all, you know, most everything else. We give sort of like time and thought to, which I think is pretty special.
It is.
How about you? What's one thing you want our listeners to know about Ear Hustle?
I think how hard everyone works.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Like Nigel's really creative and she's always in the trenches trying to edit audio. Earlonne takes responsibility for sound design.
Yeah, all the sound design is him.
He's up late every Tuesday night trying to get this thing done with Wednesday morning. It's an amazing show. We're a small team though, and we're like ants. We lived in 10 times our own way.
Oh, I like that. Like ants, okay. One thing the listeners probably already did know is that we rely on their support to keep making the show.
This year, we're trying to reach 1,000 supporters. Everyone who donates will be invited to our virtual party on June 13th.
And everyone who donates $10 a month or more will get access to Ear Hustle Plus, which is our new subscription service that has ad-free episodes and tons of cool bonus content that you, Rasan New York Thomas, are producing.
Yes, and every single gift will help us reach our goal and help us to keep making this show. Learn more and donate at earhustlesq.com.
And listeners, thank you so much.
This episode of Ear Hustle is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, my name is Anna Marci. The following podcast contains language that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised. Atriði í þessu hlaðvarpi eru ekki við hæfi allra.
You know, what is all this junk, Nigel?
Okay, so.
I don't want to call your collection junk.
You can call it junk.
But Nigel, what is all this junk?
Okay, so the other day, E, you drove over to my studio so I could show you this box of stuff that I've been collecting for, I think, almost a decade now.
10 years of junk.
Okay, so this is from a project I'm working on about the San Quentin parking lot. And so when I go to San Quentin, I always try to find something, some kind of object that was left behind in the parking lot.
Damn.
Yeah. So what do you think is my prized possession here?
Oh, this right here.
Can you describe what those are?
I think it's bra underwire.
Yep, it's underwires from bras. So I find these all the time in the parking lot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I don't know, I have almost 20 of them. Well, the first time I saw one, I thought someone was just like having crazy sex out there and somehow the underwire came out. But then after I started finding more and more, I was like, wait a minute, this is happening for a reason.
For some strange reason, I think prison officials feel that men can make a weapon out of an underwire in a woman's bra.
Mm-hmm. And it turns out, right, when the women go to visit, they get sent out. And so instead of losing their visit, they rip the wire out and then go back in.
And was that your most prized possession?
This is actually the thing I love the most. This is a little notebook you could hold in your hand. It's spiral bound. It's been run over so many times, and obviously it's been rained on, that now it's kind of just a cluster of paper held together. And when I look at it, it seems like a little nest to me. So it's a nest holding somebody's information that I will never be able to know because getting wet has welded all the pages together.
Nige,
mm-hmm.
You had a lot of stuff in that box.
Oh, yeah.
I saw some lipstick, a kid's coloring book.
that one really struck me because I just imagine that, like, some kid made this drawing and they were so excited to bring it in to show it to their dad, and somehow it fell out of their car and just got left in the parking lot.
But not. Mm-hmm. Why are you so interested in this stuff?
Okay. All right. Well, I think you know me well enough to know that I love the stories behind things, right? So all of these little mysteries are left on the ground. These objects are like breadcrumbs. And I feel like if I look at them long enough, whatever they have to tell me is going to be revealed. And I also am so intrigued by the fact that they were in somebody's hand. They meant something to somebody at some point, and then they got left behind. So I want to rescue them. I want to rescue the stories behind them.
The mind of an artist.
Or a snoop.
Okay, yeah. This is a lot of stuff here.
A lot of stuff. So one more thing I want to show you.
Ha, 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 ha.
What are these?
Whoo, shit. Those are the clamps that held my probably 6 volumes of trial transcripts together. And when I was commuted, I quickly went up front and shredded all that shit. And being that I couldn't put them in the shredder, I just took them all out. And when I came back, Nigel swiped them.
I still can't believe that you shredded it all. Weren't you worried that you still might need it at some
point? Hell no. Once they commuted it,
there
was
no
wrap.
Going back?
That was a wrap. That was over.
So what does it make you feel to see these?
You know, those are things that hold oppression together.
Yeah, but they're also your history. All right, so let me ask you this. How many hours do you think you spent going through that paperwork?
Shit, years.
That makes these valuable to me. Even though they represent something that you hate, they also show another side, which is you're not going to give up.
The tenacity.
The tenacity of Erlon.
Stuff. That's what we're talking about on this episode.
Okay, Erlon, but it's not just stuff.
Objects.
Exactly. And what they mean to us. I mean, especially in prison where you can't own a lot of stuff.
Right.
Because you just don't have that much space.
Nah, you got 6 cubic feet per person.
Mm.
So what do you keep? That shit's important.
And then there's the stuff you can't have. Those things that you owned before you were incarcerated. And while you're inside, that stuff becomes meaningful in a different way.
Yeah, and you keep thinking about it the whole time you're inside. I'm Erlon Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. And this is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia. Your soothing tools that you had inside?
Sure. I still have it. I saw it today and I was like, she's gonna wanna look at it. It has had the crap beat out of it since I've been out.
Do you remember Joseph from when you were in San Quentin?
Yeah, we lived in the same building.
Oh.
And he worked in the library with Mesro, and he was part of that D&D group out there, the Dungeons and Dragons.
Exactly. He was always out in the yard with those guys, those D&D dudes.
And when you talk to him, he always had this little thingamajig mm-hmm. that he'd sort of be turning over in his hand.
And that's what he called his soothing tool.
Hmm.
And the one that he was showing us kind of looks like a little petit four, like a little layered cake.
Right.
But the cube is made out of actually stacked thin pieces of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's small enough so you can just hold it in your hand and sort of fidget with it. So what happens when you're touching it?
When I'm touching my cube, it takes away my focus from, like, the world and what's going on around me. Like, the woman behind Erlon, probably about 15 to 20 feet away, like, crunching wrappers and eating a candy bar. The gentleman walking behind you now as he scuffles, the cars, the vans, the lights winking off him. So they become peripheral because my sense of touch is forcing me to focus on the cube in my hands.
To understand Joseph's relationship to objects, you have to know a bit more about how his brain works.
And so some time ago, when Joseph was still incarcerated at San Quentin, I asked him to come down to the media lab so I could interview him. And I noticed that he looked just a little bit different.
Your hair's longer.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever my hair gets too long or my fingernails get long, it triggers like an anger type of reaction within me. Like I get very irritated and then like I'll become snarly. This is the best I can put it.
Wait, why do you think that is?
I believe it's a part of my autism, but I truthfully don't know. It's been that way as long as I can remember. When my hair gets too long and my fingernails get long, like, I feel snarly, just like I snarl at people. One of the symptoms of my autism is intrusive imagery. My imagination is hijacked by my unconscious and blasted with, like, images of brutality and violence. And this happens, like, pretty much every waking moment that I'm conscious.
Like, just collages of horrible images?
Horrible stuff. Like, you know, I've probably seen, like, 10 since I've been in this room.
And they feel real? Like, it's actually happening, or you know?
It's not, like, a hallucination. Mm-hmm. It's just a powerful, like, a powerful overriding of, like, the, you know, your inner eye, your imagination.
Yeah.
So.
Can you give a real example of?
Sure. Like, you picked up that pen and stabbed him in the eye, and then broke the pen off. Like, they're just random vomiting of, like, terrible stuff.
Yeah. Did you think of anything when I pulled this paper out of the notebook?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I like to pull things, so there's a spiral, and just explain it, cause, so there's a spiral notebook here,
mm-hmm.
and when you pull paper out, some of the stuff gets left inside, and I like to pull stuff out, like I like to pull stuff out of drains,
mm-hmm.
and I like to pull that out. What did you think about when I pulled that out?
Like a vein being pulled out of an arm.
Yeah. So, you can imagine that prison was a lot for Joseph to deal with.
And the soothing tools were a big help.
When I first got here, I knew that I needed something to, like, to fidget with. Just because this prison was, like, so dank and dark and, like, no fresh air and no nothing to distract from it. So the very first cube I made was out of Scrabble tiles. You know, I can squeeze it between my fingers. I can roll it in my hands, I can hold on to it, I can spin it, and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
We'll circle back with Joseph in a minute.
But first, we're going to hear from an old Ear Hustle friend.
So I remember I had an ATM card from Wells Fargo Bank, ironically the bank that I robbed. I had a student ID in there. I had a Medi-Cal card. I had a Kaiser health benefits card in there. I had a phone book.
And what kind of wallet is it?
So it's a brown vintage Louis Vuitton wallet.
It's Yaya.
That's right. Ear Hustle producer John Yaya Johnson. You've heard his name in the credits. He was released from San Quentin in April, and now he's working with us on the show again.
Yep.
But this time from the outside.
And we are so happy to have him back on the team.
Yep.
Oh, it's great. And recently, he told us a story about a wallet he had.
Back before he was incarcerated.
Now, let me ask you this. Is it a real Louis Vuitton or is it a knockoff?
No, it's a real Louis Vuitton. When I got out, I was kind of excited because when I called my mother, she told me that she still had my wallet and that she had kept it for 25 years. And mind you, she had moved 3 different times. And every time she moved, she took this wallet and she put it in her closet. And so I kind of think like she held on to that wallet because it was an extension of me.
So tell me about the guy who carried this wallet.
So 25 years ago, the guy that carried that wallet was a person who, for all intents and purposes, wanted to do the right thing, but didn't necessarily confront a lot of the issues in his past.
And now, who carries the wallet?
And so the person who carries that wallet now is a pro-social, law-abiding citizen who is a person of integrity, a person that can be trusted to be anyone's neighbor, you know, and that's who it is.
Trying to see what got you to that point, shit.
Mm. What got me to that point is just my desire to change, really. Prison can consume people who don't want to change themselves, and they can get caught up into a lot of different things in prison that they never changed them lives. I was just tired of being a contradiction. You know, I've always had the desire to do the right things, but really didn't know how to articulate my frustrations. When pressure got on me, the only way I knew how to deal with it was to react and not respond. And so for me, I just made the decision to change. It was my second time ever being arrested. I was away from my family for a significant amount of time. I knew the damage that it caused them, but more importantly, I knew the damage that it caused me.
Okay, so Earlonne, I was so excited to see this wallet. And you know me, right? Mm-hmm. I am super impatient. So I kept texting Yaya like, when can we see the wallet? When can we see the wallet? Come on, when can I come over? I got to record you.
And then we got a text from Yaya saying,
I lost my freaking wallet.
One day, I was bike riding. It was hot that day, so I chose to wear a gray pair of cargo shorts with Velcro pockets. Mm-hmm. These Velcro pockets are secure. And so I didn't think anything of it. I grabbed my wallet, put it in my back pocket, secured it, rubbed the Velcro pocket, rode my mountain bike down to the lake.
A little while later, he gets back to the place where he's staying, sits down to take a nap, and when he gets up, he notices the pocket is empty. The wallet is gone.
And were you just heartbroken?
Absolutely, I was heartbroken because, as Earlonne so eloquently put it, and I wanted to kick him in the ass, he say, man, your mama had that wallet for 25 years, and you lost it in 2 months.
Some people might have been down about that, especially with that little dig you got in, Earlonne.
I'm just saying.
But Yaya was not going to be defeated.
And all of a sudden, I just had this overwhelming sense that my wallet would come back to me. For me, it was like the universe providing this message to me just to be still, and that your possessions, your prized possessions, will come back to you.
That is so Yaya to think like that. He's so optimistic.
But you know, I was optimistic with him too.
Really?
Because I know Lake Merritt.
Mm-hmm.
And one side of Lake Merritt is hella bougie.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Those people look like they all have jobs. So I thought, hey, if he loses his wallet on the bougie side, he'll get it back and it'll have money in it. You know what I'm saying? Like
yeah,
money in it. Probably even a credit card. Like, hey, you might need
like
this.
Like gifted? A gifted something? Well, what would you have done if you found his wallet?
Oh, I'd have definitely turned in all the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like, you know, the wallet itself. I think I'd have me a new Louis wallet.
Okay, well, a little while later, Yaya was at the gym and he got a text from his son. And it said,
that someone took the wallet and put it in the mailbox and mailed it back to me. They didn't even use the money that was in the wallet to mail it back. They mailed the wallet back at their own expense. And they wrote a note on a sticky note and said, I found your wallet at the lake on the sidewalk. Have a good day. And they were anonymous.
So great.
Yeah.
That makes me really happy.
My name is LaVelma Byrd, B-Y-R-D. I've been incarcerated for 26 years, and this is a list of everything I own in private prison. My television, family pictures, crocheting, my hobby craft, my radio, my CDs.
And my name is Kerry Roberts, currently incarcerated since 2007. I'm a Rastafarian, so I have what's called a Rastafarian crown. Think of a beanie with the colors green, yellow, and red.
I have a photo album of my nieces and nephews growing up since I've been down 14 years.
My favorite possession by far that I can't do without would be my Quran, Book of the Muslim.
My name is Sean. I am in what's called the California Institution for Men, or the CIM. We don't have washers and dryers, so we wash our own clothes by hand. And as sick and as disgusting as this sounds, in a lot of prisons, we wash our clothes in the toilet. Not a very hygienic practice, but it is what it is.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Well, I'm in a prison in which, for a while, we had buckets, 5-gallon buckets. And every now and then, the officers will come by and confiscate the buckets. And it seems like such a petty thing. You know, what is the big deal? You lose a bucket, you replace it. But then you realize just how important that bucket is. You're in a cell that has no chair. You turn the bucket over upside down, you use it for a stool. You have no washer and dryer. You use the bucket to do your clothes. Now you don't have to wash them in the toilet anymore. It seems like such a trivial thing, but the smallest things in here can have the biggest impact upon the quote-unquote comfort of life.
So, what
are you taking me?
I am taking you to the trunk of my car. First, I'm going to take you to the back seat of my car.
Okay. So after I showed you my box of prized found possessions from the San Quentin parking lot, you said you had something you wanted to show me too.
Yep. Something my father held onto while I was in prison, and I've been carrying in my car ever since he passed back in February. Okay, so these are some lipstick red alligator dress shoes that I bought probably in 1997. Or 1996, me and my friends, we had a R&B and hip hop club. So I used to dress up a lot. And I think I spent about $550, $600 on these shoes.
Oh my God, what year was that?
This was 97.
These have to be described a little bit better. So they are red alligator leather. There's red laces that have tassels on them with a little gold bead. So I'm not gonna say they're subtle.
I used to love to wear these, especially around a lot of my homeboys, because, you know, my background was the Crips, which wear blue. You know what I'm saying? So lipstick red is like the opposite. You know what I'm saying? And I used to just have fun with that.
Just to fuck with them?
I mean, because they used to be looking, ain't what you gonna say? You ain't gonna say nothing to me. So when I wore these, I always had lipstick red something else on, usually. Mm-hmm. Whether it was a mock neck sweater, I used to probably have a white suit with the red. I had all kind of stuff, but I know these will stand out.
Yeah. So how did you feel when you dressed up like this?
Oh, you feel dapper Danish. You know, you feel suave. You feel, you know, great.
I imagine that for pretty much anyone who gets released from prison early on, that there's this moment where you get your stuff and it's got to be like a time warp. Like, who and what am I looking at?
Absolutely. Because you're being confronted with your former self, you know, the person that you used to be.
Yep. And Joseph, who we heard from earlier.
The D&D guy.
He recently found himself in just that situation.
Joseph was released from San Quentin in December of 2019 after 15 years of incarceration. Recently, we met him in a park near where he's living.
And he seems so different than the last time I saw him in San Quentin. I mean, did you notice that?
Yeah, I did.
Like he smiled and he was making eye contact in a way that he just never seemed to be able to do inside.
Yeah, and he was definitely excited to start a new life on the outside.
Mm-hmm. But to do that, there was something really important he needed to accomplish. He needed to get back some boxes of objects that his mom had been storing for him while he was in prison.
They are ominously called the Christmas boxes.
The Christmas boxes.
That's right. They're boxes that were maybe designed to hold ornaments or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Joseph used them to hold all of his important personal belongings while he was in prison.
So in the Christmas boxes, there are 3 Zippo lighters, 3 hourglasses. There's a bunch of skeleton keys of different sizes. There's even a couple of like stainless steel ball bearings. There's a giant green cat's eye marble.
And I assume it's been 15 years since you've seen those objects.
Yep. Yep. The person that owned those is dead and gone.
Joseph says there was this way he used to look at the world. He describes it as a hero complex.
I would strive to, quote unquote, rescue people all the time to the point of self-destruction.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that was also like a major causative factor of the commission of my crime, to be arrested and have my life destroyed trying to do what I believed was the right thing, the whole world turned inside out.
We don't usually ask about crimes, but because you're describing it, how did that play into your crime?
I was asked by one of my closer friends at the time to help him kill a rapist. I went to a town I've never been to kill a man I've never known, to save a girl I've never seen.
Did you know if the story was accurate or not?
Nope. To this day, I still don't know whether or not he was an actual rapist.
And any, I don't know if you want to go, but any thoughts on that? Like,
I regret it every waking moment of my life.
Joseph was sentenced to 15 years to life for that crime.
And you hear this sometimes. He says being in prison really helped him. He got a lot of therapy, took advantage of programs that were offered to him, and he really worked hard to change himself.
And when those 15 years were up, he was granted release at his first parole hearing.
So now that Joseph's out, he wants to get those Christmas boxes back.
That's after the break.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
You sounding crystal clear today.
Thanks, E. You know, sometimes those allergies sneak up on me.
But not today. Did you change up your routine?
That I did. I now use Astapro every time my nasal allergies flare up.
That's great.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro, the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray.
Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today.
A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com.
Astapro and go.
Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
So, Joseph wanted to get the things in those Christmas boxes.
His stuff from before he went to prison.
And Erlon, you had a question for him.
The person whose stuff that was is no longer here. Why do you still want the stuff?
I need to destroy it.
That's what you're going to do with it?
Yep. You know, it's a cleansing, it's a purging. You know, all the things I collected over my life in that course of time, they're all beautiful, they're all neat, they're all cool. But they're also bound up with, like, a lot of angry demons and old memories. And striving to be this person, this protector, this good person, and failing continuously.
Joseph feels like until he gets those boxes back and reckons with what's in them, he can't really start his new life.
The only problem is he's on parole, so he can't travel to get them.
So we told Joseph that we'd go get his stuff and bring it to him.
When you guys approached me for that and then offered to go get them, I was like, yep, it's time. As soon as I get my hands on that stuff, that final piece is going to get laid to rest.
Okay, but E, I got to say here, there seemed to be a part of you that was worried this quest might not be such a good idea.
Hell yeah, I saw Lord of the Rings. Like, once Joseph got his hands on his stuff again, he wouldn't be able to let go of it. It would be too powerful.
Like, he might go back to being the person he used to be before he went to prison.
But I don't think Smeagol's ever got over that ring.
Oh, my God. Erlon's inner nerd is coming out.
All because Nigel wanted to go get this box. This Pandora's box.
Pandora's box.
How do you feel about us asking you to do this?
It's very interesting. Like, I never thought you would ask me to do this, but I'm glad you're doing it with me because I don't have to do it by myself.
Yeah.
I have looked at this bag and looked at the bag and said, not today, not today.
So, E, want to tell us who this is?
This is my sister, Tyra. Mm-hmm. And we talked to her in a previous episode, Bittersweet.
Right.
Tyra's son, Tyler, was my nephew. Mm-hmm. And when Tyler was a kid, both of his parents were incarcerated. So he lived with my moms. And in 2013, when Tyler was 19 and his parents were still locked up, he was killed by the police.
When Tyra got out of prison, E, your mom gave her a bag of Tyler's belongings.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyra's been keeping it in her closet ever since, but she's never looked at it.
Nope. All the belongings were in a blue reusable shopping bag that she'd been keeping on the top shelf of a closet in her office.
What's in this bag?
Your mom said it's all Tyler's things, like stuff that she found, just all kind of stuff that was near and dear to him. So I just took the teddy bear out the bag because it was on top. I sleep with it every night because she said Tyler slept with this every night when he was, you know, after you gave it to him.
This is a bear that you sent him when you were in prison?
Yeah, we had our first get on the bus where they had the mothers that get to see their children, and they all day, they do crafts, they do all kind of stuff. And then we had a chance to make a bag for them. You put a teddy bear in there, you put a letter in there, you put just little things just for them. And so that's what where the teddy bear came from.
So I wasn't with you in Tyra, but I was able to join you two over video.
Yeah, and how did she seem to you?
Well, I remember thinking, like, this seems like an okay thing for her, you know? Like, she was getting a chance to really think about her son and remember him. And right. That, for the moment, it felt good. It felt okay.
Right. No, I did. All right, let's go.
You ready? Oh, his immunization record when he was little, when he was born. More baby pictures.
Hey, little head. Remember that outfit?
You remember that outfit? The Star Student Report. Oh, wow.
How'd he do?
He did excellent.
And there was a note in there from one of Tyler's teachers.
He's a good writer and should be encouraged to pursue that talent. Tyler should get a math word problem practice book and be reading every day. Yes, he should. Basketball trophy, second place. This is second place.
There was a football jersey in there too.
Can you describe what that is?
It's a white and black Woodson jersey. I get to smell him. This is when all the real problems started.
Yeah, I remember when Tyler started getting into trouble. I think he was about 13 or 14.
What did he do?
Well, he had this little rebellious streak in him.
Mm-hmm.
And he even tattooed it on his face.
What, rebellion?
Rebellious.
Oh, okay.
And I remember one of the first things he did was he took my mother's car and he drove it to Inglewood, which is like maybe 50, 60 miles away.
Whoa.
And after that, it was just one thing after another.
Good Lord. He had disciplinary history. 19 suspensions, 9 physical violence, acts of defiance, 27, tardy, 24, unexcused period act. Oh, Lord, 30. What
was... He was acting out.
Come on. This is a letter from me. You want me to read it?
So this is a letter Tyra sent her son from inside prison. She tells him that she's been trying to get in touch with him because she's worried about him.
Baby, please listen to what I'm saying. It's all out of love. You are all that I have. And God gave you to me. And I don't want to lose you for in any way. I'll try and call you on Thanksgiving. I love you and I miss you tremendously. Write me back. Let me know how you feel about what I said. I'll be waiting. Talk to you soon. Love always, Mom.
There was another letter in the bag, too. A letter that Tyler had written to his mom, but never sent.
You're a good mama. Never gave up on me a day in your life. You're the woman of my dreams. I think about you every day and night. Can't let go of your love as a mother because it seems so much to me. Can't wait till you come home so we can laugh and cry about all our past memories. And this is a picture of me and him. I'm in prison, but he's like looking at me. Oh man, I can't do it.
Yeah, I hear you. We can move on. We can move on. So.
More pictures. Oh!
Yeah. Let me. Sorry about that.
That was a really tough moment.
Yeah, it sure was. There was a photo in that bag. And if I'd seen it earlier, I would have definitely removed it so Tyra didn't have to see it.
Earl, you got to go through those pictures.
I'm going through them.
Because I can't go through them. I can't do that. I can't see him like that.
My name is Carmela Frank. I am Joseph Crowder's mother.
And we're sitting in your carport.
In the carport. It's really it's shady and cool. Yes.
Okay, so E, you and I went on a quest.
That's right. Joseph, who we heard from earlier, needed to get his Christmas boxes back.
But because of his parole conditions, he couldn't travel to go pick them up. So we drove down to do that for him.
And to sit with his mom.
And a whole bunch of really chatty birds. What did you bring out to show us? What's there?
I brought Joseph's baby books. So you can see some of the pictures and how he grew into such a different person once he started having issues mentally that were not identified when he was young.
Did you see anything?
I did, and I insisted with the pediatrician that something was wrong because in nursing, he pulled away and we were done. And that was starting at 4 months. And he just didn't want a hug. He didn't want anybody to hold him. He wanted to be loved, but he loved being loved from a distance.
Carmela kept trying to find a diagnosis for her son, and she wondered about autism. But she says doctors told her that Joseph was too high functioning for that. This was back in the early 80s.
It was dismissed. They thought I was crazy, overbearing.
Carmela said that what gave Joseph comfort was being alone with his stuff, you know, like little objects that he could hold and touch.
I build him tents, lots of tents, and where he could, you know, just hide out, and he was happy there, solitude with his belongings.
Yeah. Did you ever imagine he would end up in prison?
Never, never, ever, never, never. I mean, I was watching the evening news when I saw my son's picture on the television and his two friends and three Bakersfield men arrested for murder, a gang hit. And I knew he wasn't, I knew none of them were. They were the three nerdiest guys you've ever met. I just screamed and screamed and I couldn't believe it.
Joseph was in his early 20s. He was convicted and sent to prison.
And Carmela was left with boxes of his stuff. What was it like having his things around you when he went off to prison?
It was like a death. It was like a death to me because he was gone. And then once he was sentenced to 15 years or life, then I mourned his loss.
Looking at him, did anything remind you, like the smells? Did it smell like him?
Definitely. It did smell like him. He always reminds me of a fresh loaf of bread that's just been baked, you know, like a good nut bread. Sweet nut bread.
Once you had the boxes and he was in prison, did you go through them at all, or were they just sealed? And
once I packed them, they were in the back, in the garage. Every one of them has his name on it, and when I needed to access that area and I saw them, I'd cry, and it was hard. It was very hard for me.
Was there ever a day that you forgot that he was in prison?
No, I never forgot. I never forgot that he was there. I felt like he was saved, and this is a test that he's going through right now, and he's being tested to stay strong, change your life, change and make it a better life. The fact that there's a mother out there without a son is my nightmare, and I just thank God that Joseph was able to survive the prison time, but I keep reminding him, she doesn't have her son back. I have you, but she doesn't. That's my nightmare, that woman lost her son.
Yeah.
What would your thoughts be if Joseph wanted these boxes just to destroy his past?
What would be my thought? Go for it. Go for it and start over. That's what he has right here in his hands. He has the opportunity to start over. Get rid of the crap. Just start over. He's got it in his hands. When I got a divorce, I had a bonfire. Best thing I did. It just cleansed me. But it was my bonfire. You know, I did it. I made the choice of what to get rid of. And so yeah. It was great.
It sounds like you had a ritual. You made a ritual for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. A little wine.
So what we have here, what do we have here?
So right now you're holding my Louis Vuitton wallet from 25 years ago, California driver's license from 25 years ago when I was a young man wearing cornrows and a goatee.
So after that good Samaritan at Lake Merritt, I'm sure on the bougie side, sent Yaya back his wallet, we finally got to take a look at it.
And you know I made him open it up and show us everything that was inside.
First thing that I noticed when I opened this wallet is there's a prison-made phone book.
So, of course, when you're in prison, you need something to put your numbers. You need something, and you don't have a phone book. So what people do in prison is they make them. You know, you'll get like a bunch of paper, either staple them together, tape them together, whatever you got, and you might want to decorate it with a picture of a family member, a football team.
Personalize it.
Yeah, exactly.
And Yaya's, it was white, and on the front and written in script, it said, Jay Johnson, with little sparkly stars on it. It was cute. I'm just going to give you a few names and just give me one word to describe them.
Mm-hmm.
Sandra.
Sandra is my cousin. I love her. She's in Sacramento now.
Lucy May.
Lucy May is my beloved grandmother who passed in 2002.
Pookie.
Pookie is a cousin who's also beloved. This is a rhyme that I wrote from 1995. Every day in my hood seems like 4th of July. Sparks from Gats light the sky. Brothers die. I ask the question why. Our mortuaries filled up with black folks. A lucrative business centered right in our ghettos. Every day there's a funeral.
You know how I knew that was old?
How?
You referred to a gun as a Gat.
Of course. Of course. That's a period piece.
I definitely wanted Yaya to show me that 25-year-old driver's license.
Yeah, and I remember you asked him what he saw when he looked at that old photo 25 years ago.
The first time I looked at it, I thought, man, this was a handsome guy. But more importantly, I thought that this was a troubled guy. You know, this was a guy that had a lot of different things that he had to learn to grow up. And so through that 25 years of being in the fire, you know, I guess that purified me. And now I can just look back at this person and just have a lot of compassion for him.
How does it feel seeing him?
As soon as I saw them, I was just like, oh my God. It feels like you got like that salmonella cramp before you crap your guts out. That's what it feels like.
Nigel, The culmination of our quest has arrived.
That's right. You and Joseph and our sound designer Antoine Williams and I all met in a parking lot outside my studio.
We opened the trunk of my car and pulled out those Christmas boxes we had picked up from Joseph's mom.
Are you ready to open them or is it going to be too much?
No, that's what I'm here for. Because I'm going to systematically execute everything in those boxes.
What tool are you going to use to do that?
I've got a pry bar and a sledgehammer.
Okay.
You had them on parole? No, I'm just messing with you.
Yes, I got permission.
Can we look at what's in there, or you just want to go right to destroying?
No, I'll show you.
Okay.
There are 6 candles, excuse me. Each of these were made by hand by the love of my life at the time. She made these for me.
And this smell when you open the box is so intense. It's a very sweet kind of earthy smell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed how potent that is.
Yep.
What kind of memories does that smell bring back for you?
The first word that comes to mind is hate.
Why hate?
Because I hate what I became as I collected these things. I hate what I allowed myself to become.
Which is?
I thought I was becoming a hero, but I ended up becoming a monster. So next, I'm pulling out 3 hourglasses. I found this stone at the Kern River. This was a cork from a Hennessy bottle. Anybody want a Snoop Dogg CD? Some old bills from before I got arrested.
There might be a check in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Nah.
What's that?
That is one of the original gangster fidget tools.
Okay, so this original gangster fidget tool is this bracelet made out of braided rope. And on it is this little bead that you can spin. So as he was talking about it, Joseph put it on.
And when he did that, he just ugh.
Oh yeah, he just shuddered.
He had this physical reaction to it that you could see.
That felt gross. I'm not doing that again.
Seems like it just irritated you putting it on.
Yeah, yeah. It triggered some good memories. And by good, I mean shitty.
A crowbar, a 5-pound, is it a 5-pound sledgehammer?
4-pound.
4-pound sledgehammer, and what do you call that? Not a ratchet.
Channel lock pliers.
Everyone has eye covering. Antoine does not. You better step back.
Yeah, you guys be careful.
And out of all that stuff, Nige,
mm-hmm.
there was one thing that was the most powerful object in the whole box.
That's right. The marble.
The marble.
So it was large, kind of the size of a plum. It's green. And it had all these swirls in it. And it was actually a really beguiling object.
And that marble was the most important thing to be destroyed. Because out of all of this stuff, it was the thing that reminded Joseph most about the person he was before he went to prison.
In my angriest and bitterest times, I would sit there and just brood over this thing. Just like stare at it all the time like it's trying to give me an answer. And it never did. And it just made me even more angry.
I remember thinking on the one hand, he knows this is just stuff. But he also didn't want to take any chances. This stuff was too infused with his memory in a place he just didn't want to be anymore. So he needed to physically destroy it.
A catharsis.
Reverence will give it power. I don't want to give it power back. I don't want this crap setting up shop in my house again. Everything that's been broken has been broken.
All right, let us see that marble again.
This is the last piece of a dead man's bones.
But I'm kind of curious, we went through this whole thing today that was very emotional. I didn't see you pull out your soothing tool until right now when it's all over.
Because now I'm scared.
Of what?
Once again, I'm stepping forward, 1 foot forward into an unknown. This is a goodbye, a farewell, a fuck you, and the proof that I'm never going backwards. I can't even look over my shoulder anymore because there's nothing to look at.
I'm sure a lot of people didn't think you were going to survive prison, and you maybe didn't even think you were, and you actually did, and you actually thrived in some ways.
It's God's grace and dumb luck.
Can you take some responsibility for it?
Probably the dumb luck part.
I don't know. I'm curious. I mean,
I see such a difference in you. I've said this to you before, since you've gotten out of prison, so it seems like you've already made these huge steps forward. So I got a lot of faith in you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Earlonne, did you have anything you wanted to destroy when you got out? I mean, did you have anything that you felt was weighing you down?
Probably old friends.
Oh, wow.
Nah, I think, you know, 20 years, you know, it changes people. It changes a lot, changes trajectories, you know? And, you know, it's not like people are less friends or no longer friends. They are, but we're just in different phases of our lives, you know? Yeah, I don't associate with a lot of people in my past. I do, but I don't.
So there's no object that your mom could pull out of storage that you would look at and go, oh, shit.
Only pictures.
Oh.
Only pictures. And she got a million of them. Like, the pictures would stop me for hours because I'd go through them. But, like, objects? No. I guess it's because that life is gone. It's over, you know? It's like I'm not trying to relive that shit. Nige.
Yes.
We would be remiss if we did not hear from our co-host inside San Quentin, the Honorable Rahsaan New York Thomas.
That's right.
Hey. Hey.
Hey, what's up, Nige?
Hi, my friend. Good to hear your voice.
I'm good.
And so we asked him, what do you have in your cell right now that you couldn't get by without?
My most important possession in my cell right now is my typewriter, because my typewriter keeps my voice free. I've been down with this thing like 16 years, and right now I'm using it more than ever.
What does it look like?
It's huge. It's the size of like 10 keyboards. It's so old, the memory don't work. It keeps forgetting what we talked about. Killing me too, because you get 25 pages per one typewriter cartridge. And a typewriter cartridge costs $13. I write it out by hand first. And I get it all perfect and rewrite it until I'm finally happy. And I try to type it in one take. You know what I mean? But it does definitely make. And when I'm in a flow and I'm really in a zone, I just got to hope my son doesn't have to use the bathroom.
Oh, man. Okay, let me ask you this, New York. New York, you've got enough to write an article or a love letter. What are you going to do?
So, a love letter should be written by hand, Nigel. Real love. It has to do with penmanship.
Got you on that one, Nigel.
That's a perfect answer. Spoken like a true romantic.
spoken like a man that don't want to spend $25 on that letter.
So thanks to Joseph Crowder, Carmela Frank, and Tyra Woodson for sharing their stories with us. Thanks also to Andrea Barton and Tom Frank.
Ear Hustle was produced by Naja Poor, Earlonne Woods, Rahsaan New York Thomas, John Yaya Johnson, and Bruce Wallace.
This episode was sound designed and engineered by Antoine Williams,
with music by Antoine and David Johnson. Amy Standen edits the show.
And Julie Shapiro is the executive producer for Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle would like to thank acting warden Ron Broomfield. And as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by this guy here.
So this is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the public information officer at San Quentin State Prison. For those of you out there, remember it's election time, so make sure you're registered and get out to vote. And otherwise, I will say that I approve this episode.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Thanks for that, Carmela and Tyra.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX,
a collection of the best podcasts around.
and you can hear more at radiotopia.fm. Now, before we go, we have a few more folks that we wanted to give a shout out to.
Right. These are a few of our loyal listeners who donated during Ear Hustle's recent fundraiser.
Thanks to David Arden,
Amanda Aronoff,
Philippe Audi,
Julia Bator,
Laura Belzer,
Nadia Boltz-Weber.
Erlan, you know, we've got so many people to thank, and honest to God, I think we can do better than just saying their names.
Naj.
Yes.
I have an idea.
Lay it on me, my friend.
How about we loop our musical wizard, Antoine William, in and make a song?
I love that idea. Okay, I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Erlan Woods. Thanks for listening. I remember the one comment I got from this older lady. She said, "Brother, I don't see too many men wearing black and red, and you make it look good." I was like, "Really? Really?"
Psst, it's Erlan.
And Nigel.
Here again, reminding you to donate to our spring fundraiser today so we can keep bringing you more Ear Hustle.
Everyone who donates will be invited to our virtual party on June 13th. If you've never been, it's a fun time where we talk about the season and answer some of your questions live. Uncensored, live.
And I will be on a hologram so y'all can see me.
3DE.
On Zoom. Every donation, any amount, will help us reach our goal. So please go to earhustlesq.com to learn more and please contribute.
Thank you.
If you can find it in your heart, in your pocket, in your wallet, in the couch.
Radiotopia.